This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at Dicetower.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 172.
Did you know that 172 feet is the world high diving record?
That's really high.
That's really high.
Yeah. Wow.
Dana Kuntz holds a world record for high diving at 172 feet.
At least as of December 2019.
Yes, that is correct. Hello, everybody. We are the Family Gamers. Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I'm joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
We did not have a show last week because we were crazy, crazy busy just getting home from PAX Unplugged.
Yeah, and we shunted right back into life as usual. Which did not help with the crazy busy. We got home at 1 o'clock in the morning, and everybody was getting up and going to school at 6 and 7 o'clock in the morning. It was great. So, yeah,
It was a rough week, but we did manage to get some game playing in, especially today. It is Saturday when we are recording this. It was game day. I told our middle child, Asher, who is our board gamer, we're going to game our faces off. And we tried.
And did you?
We tried. I got in, let's see here, 7 games played today. Different games.
That's a lot of games, especially for you.
Yeah, it was awesome. So, as always, at the beginning of the show, we are going to talk a little bit about what we have been playing this week.
Well, I was super excited to pick up a copy of Tussie Mussie from the Button Shy booth at PAX Unplugged. Let me tell you guys, this is well worth your $10.
Yeah, so this is the Elizabeth Hargrave game that kind of preceded Wingspan, but didn't really precede Wingspan.
Came out very shortly after Wingspan, right. Yeah.
It is an 18-card, I split you choose game.
About flower arranging.
Yeah, it's adorable and kind of Victorian, and our kids didn't love it, but I think for adults playing a laid-back I split you choose game, it was fun.
It scales remarkably well from 2 players to 3 or 4 players. You can't do any more than 4 players because there simply aren't enough cards. But it's great. Every card is different. Every card does different stuff. And I'm really enjoying it because it makes you think, but it's really lightweight because everything that the cards do is written right on the cards.
Speaking of I split you choose, we have played the game Spy Master a couple of times. Now, this is a game from Calliope Games, part of their Titan series that came out earlier this year. I think it actually says 2018 on the box, but I don't...
It didn't actually come out in 2018.
It came out in 2018. No. So this is a game where you are playing as a covert organization, and you are allocating your spies across the globe to complete these missions. And the way that you complete them is by playing resource cards from your hand that you have gathered because the spy master has taken a collection of cards and split them into various sets. And so you go around the table, everybody chooses a set of those cards, you use those cards to complete missions. Honestly, I'm not a big fan of I Split You Choose in general. And so for me, this theme actually works for me. It's not a complicated game. There's not a lot of deep strategy going on.
Sure.
There is a little bit of luck in terms of what missions come out when and stuff like that. But honestly, for the mechanic, Tussie Mussie and Spy Master, very, very different.
Very different.
But I think they both execute on that mechanic very well.
I would agree, but I'm not nearly as taken by the theme and the simplicity of Spy Master as you are. I can appreciate that you like it, but the more I play it, the less interested I am in it, really.
I mean, I don't think this is a groundbreaking game or anything like
that.
I just think that it executes on a mechanic that I don't particularly care for fairly well.
Fair enough.
But if you want to talk about a game that came out of PAX Unplugged that we've been playing a lot of, I was just posting about this on Facebook a couple of minutes ago, honestly. Your probably favorite game coming out of the show, although it wasn't a surprise, is Tussie Mussie. Mine is the Similo games from Luma Imports and Horrible Guild.
Which we had never even heard of until went to PAX Unplugged.
They are, I guess, for us, our surprise of the show. And I think a lot of people, their surprise of the show is some big game that just fell on the radar and they just ran into it and it blew them away. These Similo games are incredibly simple. These are games that use a lot of the same mechanics as a game like Codenames, but they're even more simple than Codenames is.
Simple to play, but they're harder to wrap your mind around in some ways.
So we received the Fables similar game, which is Cinderella and Little Red Riding Hood and, you know, all these different characters from various fables. And we received the Historical Persons one, which is a bunch of people from history. And the way these games work is the clue giver sets out a 3x4 grid of cards. So there's 12 of these characters, and they have a hand of 5 cards in addition. So they'll pick one of these 12 characters. In each round, they'll play a card either vertically or horizontally. The cards that they're playing are other characters that have something either in common, vertically, or not in common, horizontally, with the secret character. Now, they can't communicate in any other way. So everybody else at the table is having a discussion, and it's kind of like torture if you're the clue giver.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Because they could be going off on some tangent about how the writers of that...
And you're internally screaming of like, no!
It's just that she's a girl.
I just meant the character is female. Right. That's all I was going for.
Right. And so you do 5 rounds of this, and it eliminates characters until you either have successfully eliminated the other 11 or the guessers have misguessed. And that's basically the game. It's kind of a cooperative game, but it's fun. It's easy. You can play with anybody. And that's the similar games from Horrible Guild and Luma Imports. Like them a lot.
I did get to play this year's Spiel des Jahres nominee, I guess, or maybe Spiel des Jahres winner, The Llama.
Okay.
At PAX Unplugged.
Okay.
It was fine. I can't say that I'm sad about this whole much lighter, easier to get into games starting to win. But that said, Llama was just fine. It didn't really appeal to me that much.
Okay. I mean, I think the goal of the Spiel des Jahres is that it is a lighter game, right? It's supposed to be,
I mean, it's supposed to be, yeah,
a family weight game.
Yeah.
So that's not that much of a surprise. Part of our Gaming Our Face Off day today, we did get a chance to take out some of the Funkoverse games. So these are the games that were designed by Prospero Hall using the Funko license because Funko now owns Prospero Hall. We were playing as Batman and Batgirl fight against Joker and Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
And it's basically a beat-em-up dueling game with Funko characters, which is a lot of fun. The only other game I want to talk about, we do want to keep this short, is a game called Skulk Hollow.
Yeah, that looked really fun.
Mm-hmm. So Skulk Hollow is published by Pencil First Games. So this is Keith Mateka, who does the Thunderworks games, role player stuff you've heard me talk about a lot.
And, no.
And Ito, Eduardo Baroff, and I think there's another person involved. But the cool thing about this game, it is a two-player asymmetric game, where one player is playing as the Fox Clan. There's a special name.
Foxen.
The Foxen Clan. And this is basically a series of relatively low-powered characters. There's a main hero and some like knights and rogues and archers and stuff like that. And they're going up against a beast.
A giant of some sort.
A monster of some sort. And you start the game on a map, and the Foxen Clan has to get up to the monster and then leap onto the monster. And so there's a secondary board which represents whichever monster is being played.
Leaping up onto the monster, yeah.
I think there's 4 of these monsters, and they've got to leap around the monster and damage the monster in all these ways so that they take the monster down and they win. And it's really, really interesting because the various monsters have all these different abilities, and all they're trying to do is basically kill enough of the Foxen Clan that the Foxen Clan leaves them alone.
Yeah.
And
just Foxen go Clan, away and give up.
Right. Is trying to defeat the beast to presumably protect their homeland.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to play this with Asher. We had a lot of fun with it. I think he had so much fun with it, he didn't even mind losing, which is always a good sign.
That's impressive for him.
Yep. And I loved the art. I mean, I'm a sucker for good art, right? I loved the art. It really kind of reminded me of the Disney animated Robin Hood, or it reminded me a little bit of Root, the art in Root from Leader Games.
A little bit, yeah.
Yep. But it was great. There's a lot of replayability because there's like 4 or 5 different heroes that can lead the Foxen Clan, in addition to there being, I think, 4 of these beasts on the other side. A little mini expansion that came with it. So I'm really looking forward to playing some more Skulk Hollow.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So we teased this, I think, a little bit before we went to PAX. And so I'm going to talk about it a little bit now before we get into some of our PAX interviews. Now, we have so much PAX Unplugged content that next week's show is going to topically be a PAX show as well. It's normally an odd-numbered show, so we have an interview. It's just going to be more content from PAX Unplugged because we got to talk to a lot of amazing people. But I talked about crickets.
Crickets!
Crickets were eaten at PAX Unplugged.
Crickets were eaten by many people at PAX Unplugged.
Yes, we had some really great sports on the cricket eating. So the first was Isaac Villa from Gaming with Sidekicks, We tried out single crickets in the media room, and Asher and Claire both joined in. So there was much cricket eating there. I think we had the Texas barbecue and the sriracha, whole roasted crickets.
Okay.
Then we went down to the show floor. Over the course of the weekend, let's see, I had crickets with a very nice lady shopping in the Stronghold Games booth. Stephen Bonacore held up his end of the bargain. We had crickets together.
Mm-hmm.
I got a chance to have crickets with both Flip Flory from Flip Flory's Super Saturday Board Game Serial and Bruce Vogue, formerly of North Star Games. And I got to have crickets with Rory from Hub Games.
Oh, yeah. Rory O'Connor.
Yep.
Formerly of Rory Story Cubes.
Gosh. That might have been it. So, yeah. And then I gave the crickets away to people that wanted them for various reasons.
People wanted crickets. You heard it here first, people.
They are the food of the future.
The crickets were wanted.
They are the food of the future. So if you go to facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA, you can see a video on there of me and Bruce and Flip discussing crickets, holding them up to the camera, really, really grossing out our camera person, and then eating them.
Yep. And by the time you hear this podcast, most of the rest of the video should be up there too.
I hope so. Yeah, we have to do some editing on some of them just to clean them up, but they should be out there. So, honey, is there anything you want to add before we get right into some of those interviews?
No, it's been a long week, but I will review my notes and we'll bring you some more PAX-related content next week. People I didn't have opportunities to interview and games that really struck me when we were there.
Yeah, we had a fantastic show. I really can't wait to bring these interviews to the podcast. We talked to so many people. We're going to do some really cool stuff next year with some of these publishers. I'm excited.
As a parent, it was a struggle this year to make sure that our kids got to do what they wanted to do and had fun and that we weren't just dragging them around.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're learning more and more every con we go to how to manage that well.
Yeah, we've talked about how to bring kids to conventions and stuff like that. And even for us, it's kind of a learning experience sometimes. And one of the big things that's super important for us is every single day we sat down with our kids and said, okay, what worked today? What didn't? Could you tell that we were trying to change some stuff? What would you like to do better?
Mm-hmm.
And deep down, deep down, my favorite part was that Asher kept saying, I want to play more games.
I just want to play more games.
4 hours of games on Saturdays. Like, Dad, I just want to play more games. I'm like,
all the games.
All right, dude. All right.
Nothing but games.
And that's why today we gamed our faces off.
And we'll do it again next week.
I hope so.
On Christmas vacation.
All right. So we're going to take a break. We'll get ready to do a bunch of interviews, and then we'll catch up at the end. Hey everybody, this is Andrew at PAX Unplugged. It's day one. We're just getting started. I am in the AEG booth with Todd Rowland. How are you doing today?
Doing really well. How are you?
I am great. You're a hard man to pin down. You know that?
It is busy at these shows. Definitely busy at these shows.
All right. Well, this is cool. Every single demo table that you have here is completely full of people playing all sorts of great AEG stuff. I see Tiny Towns over here, Inner Compass, Ecos is around the corner, and I think there's something else on the other side. I got to be honest with you. Anybody who listens to us knows that we are, as a family, are obsessed with Tiny Towns. So it's one of my top played games of the year. I talk about it all the time. I recommend it to everybody in the world. At Dice Tower Con, we did that like live streaming play thing with the people at Twist Gaming. And there's a new expansion coming out.
Yes, there is. Tiny Towns Fortune will be out in the very early part of next year.
So we're talking about it a little bit. You said there's some new mechanics in there. There's some new buildings. There's some crazy stuff going on in the Tiny Towns world.
Yeah, there are. There's several new buildings. There's also new unique monuments that each player can have. But the core of the changes are the new coin mechanics. So some buildings will generate coins. Other buildings will use coins. Some buildings will let you rearrange or do unique things on your board at the cost of coins. But ultimately, coins can also be held for the end of the game to be bonus points. So it introduces sort of an economy aspect to the game as well.
Yeah, that's actually one of the really interesting things about Tiny Towns in general is that currency doesn't really exist if you don't want it to. The base game doesn't have any kind of concept of one building being more expensive than another, other than it taking up more space before it's actually built.
Right, that was sort of, yeah, that was the equivalent of an economy in the game, was how many resources and the arrangement of them, and you still have that. That aspect doesn't go away. This just adds sort of another layer on top of it that you can try to play with and use within that same system.
Well, I can say for sure that that is definitely going to end up being one of my most played games of 2020 now.
Woo! Looking forward to it, yes. But let's talk about this game. So there's a game in front of us. You've got a couple demo tables, mm-hmm. and they're all full. And this is a game called Inner Compass. Talk about this.
So Inner Compass is a game coming in March of 2020. It is a new release from the designers of Flamme Rouge, if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
In Inner Compass, you are walking through life's experiences, experiencing emotions, and creating memories. And the way you do that is on a grid board of various colors. As you move your player token around, you get to draw cards from experiences. So if you move to a red space, you're going to draw an anger experience. If you move to a white space, you're going to draw a happiness experience,
okay,
and things
sure,
like that.
Sure, sure.
As you collect them, you're going to collect sets of them. You're going to be able to turn them in to imprint permanent memories on yourself. And
okay.
that's ultimately how you score points.
Okay.
When you use all of your tokens, I know you can't see this right now, but you have a player board with rows and columns of cubes that you're going to put onto the board when you imprint those memories. When you clear an entire row, you're going to get to put a bonus marker out for special scoring methods. And ultimately, when a player has used both of those, that's going to trigger the end of the game, and the player who's had the richest life experience wins the game.
Cool. I'm going to steal one of these cards. Can I just grab a card? All right, so this is... and it looks like an anger card. It's primarily red. It's just a picture. There's no text.
There's no text. Yes.
Okay.
It just represents the concept of anger. In this case, the art on it, you see the guy has spilled coffee all over the reports that he's been working on all day. And so
yeah.
he's very, very upset about that.
So there's really not a lot of text in this game at all, really. I don't see a lot of words. There's very little.
Right. Yeah, there's not. What it is mostly through the mechanics of the game, which is the really solid part of the game. Once you get in and play and begin realizing how you can move about and collect the cards, is what's so interesting, because when you collect cards, you have the deck, and then you have cards flipped over in all four cardinal directions, which you can move. So if I move, for lack of a better term, north, I will take the card that is on the north of the deck.
Sure.
However, if I move on to the color that is the same color of the card I'm taking, I also get a bonus card off the top of the deck.
Ah.
And that's how you're going to get to have more experiences.
Okay, very
and be
cool.
able to complete your memories faster.
All right. Okay, so I'm just processing all the pieces here. I see the box says 14 plus.
Mm-hmm.
There's no words.
Right.
Where would this be at from a friendly, a family-friendly perspective?
From a family-friendly perspective, I would honestly say that kids as low as 10 can play this.
Sure.
As you know, in many cases, the 14 plus is more of a...
It's about
components
piece testing
and things like that. Yeah, yeah. But I could say kids as young as 10 could play this because at its core, they would get it from the aspect of simply moving around the board and matching the colors.
Great. That's really interesting. This is something I'm going to have to keep a close eye on. So you said this is coming out in March?
In March.
Definitely keep an eye on this. This is Inner Compass. And the rest of the family gamers, I thought they were going somewhere else. They've set up shop in front of Ecos. Can
yes.
you talk about that a little
Absolutely.
Bit?
Absolutely. Let's walk down here and take a look at it. So Ecos is a game where you're going to use tiles that represent grasslands, deserts, and oceans, as well as tokens that represent mountains, animals, forests, and things like that, in order to build an ecosystem. It'll be different every game because the way people play and build it out is going to change every game. You score points by creating different conditions. So maybe you make a large herd of antelope and you score for antelope. Maybe you get a mountain range going and you score for mountain ranges. Or perhaps you're destructive and you destroy certain areas and you get points for changing them from a grassland to a desert.
Sure.
What's neat is the way you draft in cards to give you new abilities, and each card deteriorates. So each card has a number of uses, and once that card's been used that many times, it's out. So you
Very
have to
cool.
kind of think ahead and begin to replenish your cards and get more cards and more abilities as the game goes on. You can't have a static card set that you use the whole game. You're going to have to keep changing.
Right, right.
Just like the environment is going to
yeah.
keep changing.
Yep, yep.
And it has a really beautiful board presentation. The way the game is played is really clever, too, because you have a bag full of these stones that have different symbols on them. So it may be an animal symbol, a water symbol. The active player is going to draw one of those out and reveal it to the whole table. Then the whole table is going to look at all their cards, and if they have that matching symbol, they can cover it up with one of their energy cubes.
Ah.
When a player is, and then they draw another stone, and then another. When a player has covered an entire card's worth of symbols, they'll say Ecos. That stops play. I've got something to do, and then
okay.
they activate their card and perhaps change
oh, very
the board
neat.
Score points.
Nice.
So it's got a bit of a bingo aspect.
Uh-huh.
The same player continues drawing and continues drawing until they draw the wild.
at which point all of them go back in the bag and it moves to the next player.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
since there's varying amounts of each symbol in the bag, that can reset the probabilities and you get to continue playing
again. Sure. Okay, that makes sense. Oh, and there you go. Is that the wild card?
Yeah.
There you go.
And so you play until a player gets to a certain amount of preset points. For a short game, it's generally 60. For a longer game, it's 80. And then that triggers the end of the game. There's one more round, and then whoever has the most points at the end of that round wins.
Right. And then one of the things we talk about a lot is kind of like rule variants and rule changes that we can maybe do to make it simpler or shorter. Obviously, if you're playing toward the point threshold, you can just bring that down.
Yep.
You only have 20 minutes, 30 minutes to get in a game. You can do something. Or
we found with demos,
of attention span.
Yeah. With demos, we usually play to 40
sure.
instead of 60. And that right. gives people enough time to experience the game and everything that goes on in it. As well as have a little bit of strategy.
I like that there was a mountain that was just placed and somebody put a tree on top of it. It really definitely creates a three-dimensional kind of geography.
Yeah, they did a really good job with cutting those pieces to allow for that. So
that is really cool. So this is Eco's, the first continent?
Eco's first continent.
All right, awesome. Let's see, what else we have? So we have War Chest, which I think we've talked about before.
Uh-huh.
What else is going on at AEG these days?
So we do have a new Kickstarter coming, also in March of next year, and that's Lost Atlantis, which is one of the more unique board games I think we've produced. And I'll be happy to walk you down here.
Yeah,
and show
sure.
it to
let's
you.
Take a quick look.
In Lost Atlantis, you are captain of a submarine exploring the ocean floor trying to find a portal to Atlantis.
Wow, does every box come with this big...
Every light? Box comes with it. However, wow. here's the interesting thing. You don't need the board.
Okay.
The game can be played completely without a board. In fact, we also include just that center part if you want to play on your kitchen floor. Because you can play on as big or as small a space as you like. It actually changes the strategies that people
that's
will
very
employ.
Cool.
Every player has a little stick that measures how far their submarine can move on a turn.
Okay.
You can improve your submarine by exploring, and you can add more sticks that let you move along more places. Ultimately, you're trying to explore and reveal these pyramids, which you collect resources from to open the portal to Atlantis. At the end
very
of the game,
cool.
when the portal opens, it's the big cliffhanger. And then you total up points and see who wins. Because we don't know what's on the other side.
Of course not. Right. Well, the Bermuda Triangle's on the other side.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Everything.
Yeah, okay. Got it. Okay, so this...
Bigfoot, Loch Ness are all on the other side.
Very interesting. This is a game that I would probably want to play to really feel what this game is like. So.
Yeah, because there is quite a bit going on. It's not that... Your turns are really not that hard to grasp once you start playing. It's one of those games where it seems like there might be a lot to digest at the beginning, but once you actually sit down and take a turn, it's pretty quick and simple. You have impacting choices, but not too many choices to make every turn.
That's cool. Yeah, this is... It's beautiful. The pieces for this look great. I'm going to snap a couple pictures of all these games, so we'll have
Absolutely.
Them in the post for this. But this looks really cool. I'm definitely excited to see this one come out.
Yeah. So that'll
this
be on Kickstarter
Lost Atlantis.
In March,
you said? Yeah, awesome. All right, I think that's pretty much... I think we've covered the games. We walked around the booth. You've given me the tour. Thank you so much, Todd, for meeting with us. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll be in touch in the future.
That sounds great.
All right, bye, guys. Hey everybody, we are here at the Deepwater Games booth at PAX Unplugged 2019. Asher is playing Fantastic Factories, which is this really, really cool looking game. I'm here with Chris from Deepwater Games. We're going to talk about this and a bunch of other awesome stuff that is coming out from Deepwater either now or very near future. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, nothing much. We're here talking about Fantastic Factories. It is a dice placement game where each player has four dice, and the dice represent your workers. Workers can do three things. They can build, train, or manufacture. So training allows you to manipulate the dice. Building is going to be building core facilities. Manufacturing is going to be manufacturing components to upgrade those core facilities. Your goal in a 1-5 player game is to have the most efficient factory in a limited number of turns. It's about $40 MSRP. Currently, we still have additional surplus of the Kickstarter promos, which includes the Cryo Lab. And we'd love to have it on a video and show you how to play.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I love this art style is very open. It's very appealing. The game's rated 14 plus.
Yeah, that's more of a, hey, some people aren't going to be gamers. And we don't want non-gamers to come into this with a 10-year-old that's not hasn't played anything other than Monopoly before. This is a Euro mid. It's not going to be Euro heavy. But you're looking at about a 45-minute to a 60-minute gameplay. But overall, if you're a gaming family, you're going to be able to play this at 10 years old without a problem. It's really just one of those rule of thumbs. You know, a lot of people
have told me, your kids might be a little young for this. And they're playing games that are made for 10, 12, 14-year-olds when they were 5 and 7.
Sure.
And one other thing is Asher right now is actually doing a puzzle. So there's a solo mode to Fantastic Factories,
yes,
too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all included. And it's going to be about the same time to do the solo. And basically, you're gathering resources and the products that are manufactured, you are attempting to, depending on what cards you're drawing, you're attempting to build a certain, in a certain order, components, so that you can have the efficiency level and get bonus points.
Sweet. So you guys made, I don't know if, like, the soft debut announcement was PAX Unplugged officially for Welcome to New Las Vegas?
That is right now. We did that last night. We had a meeting with a lot of other publishers, and we did kind of soft announce it. It's still probably a quarter off, so we're looking at closer to April at this point. But it is going to be not only a sequel to Welcome 2, but if you're familiar with Welcome 2, it builds new layers of strategy as well as new ways of scoring on top. So now instead of a single sheet, you have two sheets.
Okay.
So you've got one that is your New Vegas, and it's got five streets of different casinos theaters and cinemas, things like that. You got a VIP lounge. You've got actually a limo that you can drive through. You want to take
all right,
the VIP
all right.
by all the sites and get bonus points for that.
Cool.
So there are multiple ways to do scoring now, as well as columns, not just rows.
Oh, neat.
Once you complete the columns, if you're the first to do it, you announce it, and you actually get the bonus for a high-rise hotel at the bottom of each column. Anybody else can still complete that column afterwards, but they only get a small hotel. So on your score sheet, all of these are laid out, and the scoring is very similar to the original Welcome 2. You fill in the bubbles. The next number of it that's visible is the points you're going to get for all of the different variables.
Nice. One of the things about the Roland Wrights is they've been a lot more simple over time, and we're starting to see some more complex gamery
exactly.
Roland Wrights come out. And I've played a few that I really, really like.
This isn't a traditional Roland Wright. There's no
dice. That's true. This is a flip and right. Okay. You're correct.
There
yep.
You go.
Yep. That's fair. All right.
No, I
repent.
Welcome 2 will also, the original Welcome 2 will also see two additional expansions in 2020. So we're still continuing to support our fledgling games through our growth.
Nice. I don't think you can call Welcome 2 a fledgling. I mean, it took the board game industry by storm.
It did. I was really, really proud to see the recent YouTube video that BGG put out that showed the play counts of games over the last 20 years. And I swear it was like watching a horse race. You're seeing all these games. You're like seeing Catan. You're seeing Carcassonne.
Yeah.
You're seeing all these
those are games. Awesome.
And then it was great at the end when it stops. Number 5 was Welcome 2. And such a new game to hit the top 5 made me very proud.
Yeah, that's awesome. I will say, I will warn people that videos like that, it is impossible to, like, pull it up while you're working and keep working.
Oh, yeah.
You stare at it slack-jawed.
Exactly.
But it's great.
Thank you.
So let's talk about something. So you've got this really cool, like, play mat for Mystery of the Temples.
Yeah.
We just reviewed that.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the prequel to Mystery of the Temples.
Yeah, the prequel will be coming out called Trial of the Temples. So it will complete the trilogy from ES4. You start with Trial of the Temples. The games are completely unrelated so as far as mechanics go.
Okay.
But there is a narrative thread that flows between the three, as well as the same artist has done the artwork for all three games.
Right.
So Trial of the Temples will be out still about a quarter away. It's at print right now, so we should see it within the next couple months.
Okay.
Mystery of the Temples is the second. Then Realm of Sand is one that I know you were a little interested in. That is the third in the series, and I lovingly refer to that as the child of Patchwork and Splendor. It does use the polyominoes as well as the grid layout. So we're looking at the box right now for those of you that are following along with us on the audio. You've got three different tiers of schematics. So you've got tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3.
Mm-hmm.
Tier 1 are simple. You can use those with just the polyominoes that are available to you. Tier 2, you're going to need to have a little more strategy. A lot of times you'll have to be using rewards from Tier 1.
Okay.
Now, once you get to Tier 2, it's the only place to get rewards of the yellow or the gold and
okay,
the blue
okay. Yeah, yeah, okay.
pieces. And those are required for the third tier.
Oh, interesting.
All of the cards have a star in the top left with a number, and that's the number of victory points. But what determines the time, the length of the game, is actually in the top right of the cards. It's a little hourglass with numbers on it.
Yeah.
So we like to say that everybody should start with playing an 18-hour game. People's immediately eyes go really wide, and I said, no. 18 hourglasses, it's about a 25-minute game. And it's
you just like messing with
exactly,
people.
Exactly, I do. Yeah. It's so much fun.
Yes.
But once you collectively across all players, and this is a one-player mode also, so 1-4.
Okay.
Once you collectively across all players collect 18 hourglasses,
sure,
it'll be the end of the game.
Oh, that's a cool way to do it.
On average, about 25 minutes.
Nice.
But you can use the option to play a 30-hour game or a 40-hour game, right, and take it to an hour and a half if you really want.
Right.
If you're just wanting to play throughout the night with two or three players and just really enjoy what you're doing, mm-hmm, you can play it till the cards are gone.
Right. Or on the other side, if you've got children with short attention spans,
you can play an 8-hour game.
I like it. And then they can tell all their friends they played an 8-hour game.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
I love it. All right. And so you also mentioned when we were talking before, Claim 2.
Yeah, Claim 2, it will be coming out first quarter. So it expands on the rule set as well as adds 5 new factions. So Claim 2 will be coming out first quarter and will have expanded rule set for you to play more than 2 players.
Awesome.
So the original Claim was very well received. And we had the Ghost faction that you could add in. But you can only play with 5 factions at a time when you're playing a 2-player game. You can play with more when you get the expanded rule set.
Awesome.
And as a little side note, one of our authors with our sister company, Source Point Press, is actually partnering with the artist that does all the artwork for Claim, and there's going to be a trade paperback and
a comic book
coming out that actually investigates the world of Claim, and there's going to be a doppelganger and a goblin that are basically they think they're Han and Chewie, but they're really R2-D2 and C-3PO, and they get in with these other factions and accidentally end up not so much murdering, but they end up eliminating people that have a legitimate claim to the throne.
Oops. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, too. Do you know when those are going to be due out?
That's still probably a year off. They're still being written right now. Greg Wright's the author, and he just finished the third trade paperback in the Monsters series.
Nice. Well, I mean, as usual, Deepwater's got a lot of really great-looking stuff. There's a lot of cool stuff coming out in 2020. I'm looking forward to it. I really want to play some Fantastic Factories at some point. Realm of Sand looks like a lot of fun. So thank you so much for showing them to me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
All right, take care. We are on the show floor at Unplugged. It's still day one. We're at the Haba booth, and I am here with T. How are you doing today?
I'm good. You said it's still day one, and I cried inside a little bit.
Well, if it helps, there's less than 3 hours left to the exhibition hall on day one.
That helps a lot, tremendously.
I'm here to help you.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel supported.
All right. But we are in the Haba booth, and that means we are talking about kids' games, and we are going to talk about some games that look really, really great. So when I think Haba, I think Yellow Box. I mean, that's not a surprise, right?
No.
But the two games that we're going to talk about first, neither one of them comes in a yellow box. The first one is this game right in front of us called Miyabi from Michael Kiesling. Tell me about this game.
So this is a tile placement drafting game, and it's for 2 to 4 players ages 8 and up. And the idea is you are drafting and building a Japanese garden. So each player is building their own garden, and every round you're going to put out a set number of tiles, and the tiles are in different sizes, and how many you'll put out will be determined by the number of players, and you'll draft them. So on your turn, you're going to draft one of the tiles, and there's some really simple placement restrictions because it's Michael Kiesling, and if you're going to put tiles on a board, he's going to give you some restrictions. And the first one, really simple, every tile has an object type on it, and you have to make sure that that object type is in the row that corresponds to that object type. So all
sure.
the maple trees go in the maple tree row, all the pagodas in the pagoda row, koi ponds in the koi pond row, so on and so forth. The second placement rule is every column can only be used once a round. So when you place the objects in a column, you're going to indicate that you've used that column this round by raising the lantern or lighting the lantern on that column. And if you try to put a tile so that the objects are in a column that has the lantern already lit that round, you just can't. Not allowed.
Okay, sure.
Right? And then the last placement rule, really simple. The tile, you're going to be building and placing the tiles upon each other as the game progresses so that you build a higher and higher stack of tiles. So when you place a tile on top of another tile, you need to make sure that the tiles are fully supported. So you can't place a tile such a way that there's a gap underneath it.
Sure.
And that's it. Those are the placement rules. After you place the tile, you'll score points equal to the number of objects on the tile multiplied by the level that the tile is on. So if you place a tile that has three objects on the second layer, you will get 6 points.
Oh, so it's actually beneficial to build it up.
Yes. Yeah, you really want to. And we actually, in front of us, studio audience at home can totally see this. We actually have a semi-completed game in front of us, and you can see that one of the tiles, I think that one has been built. No, that one has been built to like the fourth layer. So if she was able to place a three-level bush on that support area, she would actually get 3 times 5. So she would get 15 points for that, which is a lot.
So it's not just the squares that show icons, it's the number of squares the tile has.
Yes, exactly, yeah. So the number of objects on the tile does match exactly to the size of the tile as well. So.
Oh, okay, I see it, okay. All right, my bad.
And then there's also, that's not the only way to get points. There's some bonus stuff, and then there's also like a majority at the end of the game. And then if that wasn't enough for you, which it's enough for me, there's actually 5 variants for like scoring. They're like little mini expansions, and you can mix and match them to add different complexity or introduce new strategies to the game, depending on how you want to play it.
Wow, and that all comes in the base box, I guess.
In the base box, and it's $39.99 MSRP.
Very, very cool. So that is Miyabi. And everything we're talking about is already out. Everything's out for the year, so this stuff is available at your friendly local game store or at Amazon.com. All right, and the other game that I'm looking at is Mountains. Tell me about Mountains.
So Mountains was actually one of our Gen Con releases. Mountains is designed by Carlo E. Rossi, and I probably butchered the name on that. But Mountains is another one of those games that's for 8 and up, and it's 2 to 5 players. So that one does support 5 players, which I know you're usually interested in. And that one is my favorite way of describing it. So basically it's like Go Fish meets Clue. So each player has a hand of cards, and the hand of cards is like different hiking equipment that you need. And on your turn, you're going to flip over a hike, and the difficulty of the hike corresponds to how many pieces of equipment you'll need for that hike. So let's say I flip over a difficulty 3 hike, and it says, oh, you need a carabiner, an ice pick, and a water bottle. And if I have some of those items, I would reveal those items. And if I don't have one or more of those items, I can ask to borrow what I'm missing from my opponents.
Okay.
But I have to remember who has them. So if I said, hey, can I borrow your ice pick? And you were like, oh, yes, here, surely. Before I ask you, actually, to ask you, I have to give you a favor token. And if you said, no, I don't have an ice pick, you still would get to keep
I
that
get to keep favor token.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
But if you said, yes, I do have an ice pick, you still keep the favor token. And you reveal your ice pick. You don't give it to me. You just show it.
Okay.
I borrow it for a hike. And then it stays with you. So in the future, if anybody needs an ice pick, they have to remember who at the table had that ice pick.
Ah.
Right? So you can do some social bluffing for like a more strategic game or a more advanced game. I like to allow people, and it says in the rules, like you can bluff, you can lie, but as soon as a favor stone is given, you cannot lie anymore.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah. So for a younger audience, you can, or for a less involved or less advanced game, you don't have to have the bluffing element in there. But the reason you want to do the hikes is because different hikes have different difficulties. You'll get more favor tokens if you finish them, and you'll get stamps. Because the goal is you want to try and get the most stamps in your stamp book. So there's a little stamp pad with a stamp.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
Which corresponds to the hiking pins for like hiking the Himalayas. Do you know the pins that you get for summoning like 14? The only way to get this pin, and you like, they usually like hammer them on walking sticks or whatever.
Oh, wow.
Is you have to go to the summit of the mountain. That's like literally the only place you can get them. And in the olden days, there was stamps, like wooden carved stamps, and so you had to hike to the top of the mountain to get the stamp.
Oh, sure, of course.
To prove that you did it. Yeah. So that's where the theme comes from.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's mountains.
Just like with Miyabi, that game looks beautiful.
It's gorgeous. That's my favorite cover right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And what about Boom Bang Gold?
The classic. So Boom Bang Gold is a riot. So Boom Bang Gold is a Game Night Approved Night game. So it's our older, it's 7 and up, and it's 2 to 4 players, but it is silliness. So you have a box, and there's a whole bunch of like rubble in it, and the box is designed such that there's going to be like a mini explosion. So everybody goes 1, 2, 3, and then everybody throws a stick of dynamite, not a real stick of dynamite, into the box, and it causes things to pop up,
okay.
And the tokens will flip. And as soon as we throw the dynamite, we're going to use one hand to try and reach and get all the gold that we can out of the box.
Okay.
And there's, like, hidden creatures, and there's some silly stuff, and then there's items that you can do to, like, mess with other people. So you can be strategic and, like, try and grab the items, or you can try and, like, grab the actual gold, or, like, you can do that kind of stuff. So it's just a fun, silly, like, quick race grab-em game. So, yeah, that one I like a lot. It's really funny. We're actually doing a mega game here at PAX where we're playing with 80 people at once. So there's going to be a lot of tokens on the floor, that one.
That's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
All right, awesome. Well, I want to talk about a couple more things. So you also have up here Valley of the Vikings, which is the 2019 Kinderspiel des Jahres winner. We're going to have a review for that up in probably the next month. That is a, I don't know, bowling slash cricket game? I don't really know. With Vikings?
Yeah.
With Germans? With kind German children. That's a boatload of fun. It's a blast. Adventureland, which by the time this comes out, we will have just released the review for Adventureland. So that's another... that's a weird game, like with the way the movement works going diagonally down the board and all that stuff. Very, very odd. And then of course we just released our snap review for the Hermes, which I love. It's a great game.
I like it. The Hermes is such a unique game. I did read your review and I do agree with it 100%, and if you want to learn more you have to go and read the review to find out what that is. But I still love the Hermes because it's so unique that a game. And it works to try and get engaged listening. It's a game about engaged listening. And it does it works. You have engaged listening with the game. So I just think it's so interesting and novel.
The primary mechanic of listening to writing is awesome.
And you don't think it's going to work, but it does.
It does. It totally works.
The listening to writing, yep. It works.
Yep. So we did that as a snap review, which means it has associated audio. And you can listen to it, and you will... hear us use the clocky-talky. So that is us at the HABA booth at PAX Unplugged 2019. It is 15 minutes closer to the end of day one. I am here with T. Thank you so much for spending some time.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm here with Toby from Oink Games.
Hi.
On the first day of PAX. And Oink Games is making a great showing here with all the games, really. But you were going to tell me about Nine Tiles Panic.
So yeah, Nine Tiles Panic is one of our new ones from Jean-Claude Pellin and Jens Merkel. And it's a puzzle game that's partially based on speed, partially not based on speed. Everybody has a set of nine tiles. All the sets are the same, but they're different on each side of the tile. And what you're trying to do is match these tiles up to achieve 3 goals. The whole group has the same goals. And on your tiles, you have different symbols. So they have roads on them, and then you have boys and girls and agents and aliens.
Dogs
and houses. There's all sorts going on in there. And you're trying to match them up so the roads all match up, so you form pathways around your town. And so you have a 3x3 grid that forms at the end to achieve what's the goals which are written on the 3 goal cards that are presented. Initially, everybody's just competing at the same time, but there is no timer. And then once you achieve your goals and you think you've completed, the first player takes the first player token and then flips the timer, and then everybody else has 90 seconds to complete.
Very cool. And then the goals range all over the place from, like, have the most boys in your city to have the longest road, you know, aliens times hamburgers.
Exactly. So we've got some nice, simple, straightforward ones, which are just counts of options that you have. So, as you say, boys or girls or aliens. We have options with longest roads. So perhaps you want to make a very weavy, windy road that folds back on itself multiple times. Or we have ones that want lots of short individual roads. It depends. Again, they all... vary depending on the goal cards that there are. And there's 40 goal cards, so there's a lot of variety. We also have some starred goal cards, which are a higher level and an enhanced goal, which are much more difficult. So on first plays, never play with them. They are more complicated. You will struggle. I play a lot, and even with those goals in there, I still struggle with them. And some of these then have to, you have to be achieving two or three goals with actually in one goal. So it'll be having the most boys in a particular region and area, and those goals to actually achieve and lay out the tiles are quite complicated to be able to do it.
Oh, sure.
It works really, really well though. And it plays from 2 to 5 players. It scales very, very well because you don't gain points for how, say you had a goal that showed number of boys. You don't score points by how many boys you have, but by how well you achieve the number of boys within the group. So it's group-based rather than...
So you said, like, in a 5-player game, if you had the most, you would get 5 points.
Yep.
And the next player would get 4.
Yep, 4, 3, 2, 1.
But if you're in a 2-player game, you're only going to get 2 points for having the most.
Exactly. So then, you know, the 5-player game, you'd play up to 25 points. The 2-player game, you only play up to 10 points. But because of that difference, it still scales perfectly. It's still very, very good. And then you can house rule it if you wanted to be playing longer games with more cards and obviously with more points being achieved as well.
Very neat.
It's been very popular.
Yeah, it looks very cool. It is definitely the kind of game my family would enjoy. It's a little bigger than the standard box I'm used to seeing from Oink. It's about 2 of the very small boxes.
So yeah, it's 2 width, and it's still the same single box height. We have our European and Japan release one, which is 1.5 height and still the same face. But the American release is, yeah, it's 2 wide. But there's a lot more game in there, and it plays 2 to 5 straight out of the box, which is quite rare for a game.
That's awesome. We love games that go up to 5 players right out of the box.
It's actually quite a good selling point for us as well, because as you say, most games you'd need the expansion, you need to buy other bits.
You need to buy 2 copies, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This does scale with multiple people as well. If you want to play more groups because of the puzzle element, you can have 2 sets running at the same time, and it still works just as well.
That makes sense.
It's very, very adaptable. It's very good.
Very cool. So can you tell me about Fafnir?
So Fafnir is our brand spanking new game. It was released literally 2.5 weeks ago, and the designer Jun Sasaki, who owns and is the main designer for Oink Games, only actually finished developing it 6 weeks ago.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's hot off the presses. Fafnir is a legendary dragon from Japanese culture.
Okay. Yep.
And everybody calls their chickens Fafnir because the chickens, when they're called Fafnir, have a myth that they lay gems and jewels and golden eggs.
Okay.
And what you're trying to do is collect those gems and jewels and golden eggs and score points from them. And you do this by bartering and having it like basically a hidden auction, and the person who wins it pays the currency from the gems and jewels that they use to pay for the gold, the other gems. So basically you're exchanging gems to make gems to win gems, if that makes sense. I know it's a convoluted way of explaining it.
All right.
So everybody has a shield and some hidden pieces. You use these pieces to bet for the pieces you wanted to win in the middle. Once you've decided how many you're going to bet with, you submit them to the middle, and everybody shows their pieces all at the same time. Whoever has played the most pieces wins what's in the middle, but then the pieces they've used then stack up underneath another tile, and that dictates how long the game is going to go for. So say if you're going to play for with 2 players, the game will last until one particular resource has 6 in it. If you're playing with 4 people, it will plan to have 8 in it.
Okay.
Because people will be inherently playing with more and more pieces to try and get rid of pieces that they don't want to keep the specific gems that they do want.
But the more pieces you give up, the faster the game is going to end.
The faster the game ends, but also the less pieces you have.
Sure.
But then once the game does end, you have to score points. And the problem with having too much at the end, you order your pieces on how many you have and get points based on the order that they come in. So the gems that you have the most of, you get 3 points per gem. But if you have more than 5 of that particular gem, you get no points.
Oh, no.
Because you've been too greedy in that particular resource, and therefore you get no points for it at all. The next ones, then, you would get 1 point, or 2 points, sorry, and then anything else. So if you have collect a full variety of the 5 different ones, the 3rd, the 4th, and the 5th ones that you have score you minus points per tile of each one of those you have. So you're trying to optimize and win the correct ones whilst trashing other ones, because you're getting gaining positive points but also negative points, and there's actually quite a lot to keep track of in the game. It looks very, very simple, but actually it's one of our more complicated games. Like, of all our games, it's actually more of a gamer game than one of the simple family completely accessible games.
Sure, but it still seems like one that once you kind of get the hang of it,
Very, very much so, yeah. It's still, once you've got over the initial rules explanation, it still plays nicely. It's smooth. Yeah. Anyone can play it because everybody understands the bartering system that goes on in it, and how to win and how not to win. And then again, you play multiple rounds until someone has 40 points, and it flows very nice. It's a very quick game. There's no downtime with it. There's not too much analysis paralysis. And if people are too greedy, yes, they might win the pieces that are in the middle, but they have to pay a lot for it, so they lose a lot for it as well.
Sure.
Which then again also ends the game quicker, where everybody else still has pieces left over. But it's brand spanking new, and it's one I need to play more.
All right. Very cool. One last one. I had already talked to you about how our family really enjoys A Fake Artist Goes to New York, and you told me that Insider has some of the same feel but is even a little bit more accessible.
Yeah, very much so. So Insider plays from 4 to 8 players, and whilst Fake Artist has to have 5 players to play smoothly, Insider you can play with one less at 4. It's the yes-no game, or 20 questions. Most people know the yes-go game.
Yes.
You'd think of something. I then have 2 minutes or 20 questions to guess what it is.
Yes.
With Insider, it's the same game, yet someone else also knows the word that is being trying to be guessed. So say I'll be asking you, you'd be the master, you'd know what the word is that everybody's trying to guess. There's also an insider who also secretly knows that same word, and no one else knows that they know that word, and they're trying to get the group to correctly find the right answer without being found out.
Gotcha.
It sounds very, very simple, but actually it's quite tricky and complicated, because you're trying to ask questions which aren't too obvious. When you have situations like the yes-no game, often one person will dominate the questioning and will steer the group, and they'll be going off on completely the wrong tangent. And the insider's got to try and pull them back towards the right direction without making it too obvious.
Because if we figure out that they're the insider, then
they lose the game.
They lose.
So the group wins if the group gets the correct answer. That's great.
Sure.
The insider loses if the insider gets caught out for giving them the right answer, or the insider loses if the group don't get the right answer. So the insider still also can give the right answer in the end, because it might almost be a double bluff that they gave the answer but they didn't even know it was the answer.
Yeah.
And it's that the questions and tactical questioning, and also the master having to listen to the questions of what's going on to be able to, you know, establish who knows more than what they should do. It works very well with families, even young families, because young children still know how to play the yes-no game. They can still guess things, but you can rig the deck so though the insider might still be random, younger family members, it's still accessible to them because they can still just be made a normal person. They can still partake and they don't feel like they're being left out. It gives good observation for objects in houses, rooms, buildings. It's very easy to, you know, basically rig the whole game around that so anyone can play it.
To make it so that anybody, even if they can't read, you know, they can manage it.
Everybody knows what a spoon is in a house.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
They know how big it is, they know where it is in the house, they know what it's used for. You know, if you've used one today, certain yes no questions that they can ask me, have I used one of these today? Do we have one in the house? Anything like that, it's really, really accessible. It's very, very good. And it also works with adults just as well, because adults have generally the same level of intelligence as children for nearly all games.
For a lot of games, yes.
Yeah. It plays up to 8 straight out the box, but actually you can play it with more players as well, just like the yes-no game.
Sure.
The timer runs for 3 minutes, so as long as the timer's running, people can keep on asking questions. And
that's
then you have a lot of discussion at the end of the game also about the questions that were asked, and people are thinking about what's been asked, why did they ask it, was that a good question, was that not a good question, was it too obvious a question? It's tricky. It's really difficult being the insider.
I believe it. I think that's a game that my family would enjoy a lot, especially seeing as how it ranges so well over different ages and skill levels.
Yeah, very much so. Like, Fake Artist has the issue that you need 5 players, and a 5-player count can be difficult, even with some families, you know, it's...
Well, we love 5-player count, but our youngest can't read yet.
Exactly.
So Fake Artist requires you to be able to read to even know if you're the, you know,
you're the
fake artist
or not. Or have such a simple word that they can understand the world. Whilst insider,
right.
Because you can rig it. Fake artist, you can rig a little bit, but it's more tricky and it's a bit more obvious that you're doing it.
Right.
Whilst insider, it's very easy to do, which makes it super good with families. I play with my nieces a lot, and one of them's 6 and 5, and it's great, and it works, and they still feel like they're enjoying the game without knowing the game's even rigged. And everybody's having fun.
Everybody gets to have fun together.
Exactly.
That's why we play games as a family. Well, thank you very much for your time, Toby.
No problem.
Family gamers, PAX Unplugged Day 1. There's a whole bunch of people standing around this little tiny table. It is me, Andrew. It is you.
Anitra.
It is you.
Claire.
Ross Thompson.
Ross Thompson from the OP. We are looking at Toy Story Obstacles and Adventures, a cooperative deck building game.
Yes, we are.
This is a game that the second this came out, I was like, gonna buy it.
Awesome.
Immediate. Talk about the game.
So it's great. So it plays alongside our deck building engine. So in this game, you're playing through as Woody, Buzz, Jesse, and Rex, and Bo Peep. And it's a 5-player game, but only after game 2, because it plays through each movie.
Of course.
Okay. So you're playing game 1, book 1, game 2, or movie 2, and then it also plays with the 2 animated shorts. So it's got all 4 movies, and then the Halloween and the Christmas one.
Oh, not the Hawaiian Vacation?
I think just those 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But so you're playing through there, and It's got a lot of the same where you're trying to battle against your villains, but the villains at this point, there are more obstacles and things you need to overcome, right? So no one dies in Toy Story, right? Instead, you're put in the toy box, or you're injured, and you're working through to overcome different things. So like in the first one, you're battling against Sid, and then also you're working through your friendships, right? Because Woody and Buzz are still getting to know each other, and so some of the obstacles are like overcoming jealousy and things like that. So you use all your imagination tokens, and as we have the Pixar lamp and the Pixar ball for those icons, their insight and imagination.
Very cute, very cute. Please tell me you fight Emperor Zurg.
What?
Please tell me you fight Emperor Zurg.
I mean, spoilers.
Oh, sorry. When did Toy Story 2 come out? Like 15 years ago?
Yeah. You totally do. But you don't fight him, but it's overcoming obstacles, right? And so, but you have him there. And then what's kind of one of the fun things when we did with this game was we helped increase a lot of the downtime with other players' turns. So it wasn't already that bad, but we have a lot more cards now that add to more synergy. So if you're playing with the army men, you have them down, and you have one in your hand, and you have one in your hand, and I play one, it'll say, hey, if you're holding one, you get more insight on your turn right
awesome.
Now.
Awesome.
Or you get more imagination. Or you can play another card or draw a card. So the more you have of those guys,
yeah.
It really kind of dives into it, which is super cool. We also encourage playing with your hand out, so that way people can already see what's going on. That way, oh my gosh, I should play this card now, so then you get more points then, and then I can do this thing.
Sure, of course,
very
neat.
Also, as you're going through each mission, it's got the movie board right there. So as you're going along, the little tracker token is going down. So in the first one, it's the moving truck. So as it gets farther along, more bad cards can pop up. So you need to work to defeat the problems before you're drawing 2 and drawing 3 and so on. And and then your health is a little bit more too. So it's got kind of a larger swing to it. So if you're a Hogwarts battle expert, you'll find that you may lose right away in game 1 with Toy Story. It happened to my group. We were hardcore Hogwarts battle players, and then we lost in game 1 of Toy Story.
That's
because
crazy.
Because we thought we were, we'll just heal and do these things there and make sure, but sometimes the swings are a little different.
Uh-huh.
So we changed up how that all works out. So it's still in the deck building, you know, like you're buying your cards, adding to your hand, doing these things, but it changed just enough where you're like, awesome, like I got to play through it and do all that. So I haven't even played past 4 yet, because I haven't seen the 4th movie.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't want spoilers. I don't want to be crying in the game, right? So
we watched Toy Story 3, okay? And, you know, spoilers, right? So everything's happening. They're all holding hands in the box on the conveyor belt.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Anitra and I...
Oh, my God, just crying.
Disasters. Total disaster. The kids are looking at us like, what is wrong with you?
Oh, yeah. So I hadn't seen it yet, but I have watched it now. But I went to go home to visit my parents over the holidays, and I come in right at that scene.
Oh,
and,
man.
And I walk in right as they all hold hands, and I'm just like, what is... I don't even know what's happening right now. And it was like,
how is this possible?
Yeah, what is like, it's a fan thing? It's like, oh no, it's like, oh, you're just like, man, Pixar rocks it.
They're amazing. Right? They're absolutely amazing. I mean, they actually released a movie where they use emotions to play with your emotions.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's
brilliant.
It's good stuff. So yes, yeah, so Toy Story, it plays along with it, which is very, very fun. So if you know Hogwarts Battle, it's also aimed to be more at kids too.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. And then we have another ability called traits in the game. It's more the cards. So you get playful, inquisitive, curious, but all the different art for that is all the different aliens.
Mm-hmm. So they can express all the different emotions.
Yeah. So they have all different kinds of little things.
Ooh.
Adventurous. They're wearing a little like hat and all kinds of cool stuff. So.
And of course, it's using all original Disney artwork and all that stuff.
Yes.
So it's like right on.
Yeah, yeah. We have some art that's new, like all the alien art, and then everything else is just taking everything we know and love and then putting it into a good boat.
Sweet.
That sounds awesome.
All right. Yeah. I'm still on board.
Yeah, yeah. It's great.
Claire, do you have any questions?
What's your favorite character?
Favorite character I like playing is Rex in this one. So and his art has the he's going like the. In the background, and it's we can pull it up right here, but it's got a lot of this the cool old school dinosaur illustration going on the back of it, so it's got a lot of that cool sunsets and things there. So here's Woody's card, which definitely plays into Woody's theme, like,
yeah.
from in two, where it's a lot of that stuff
the
there.
Buzz is stuff.
Very Space Ranger-esque,
yep.
Right? And then there's Rex.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got the comet in the background, too, right? Just like it's...
Rex definitely looks like a science fiction novel cover.
100%, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, then they got Bo Peep.
Very
cute
tail.
Porcelain,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then you got Jessie.
Yeah.
Rocking the same thing, but also a bit updated, right? Because she came out a bit later and the whole thing,
yep.
And so yeah.
That's great.
So yeah,
awesome.
It plays into it very well, and then all your tokens are in here, and same kind of thing. As you get more dice and more so on, they add in each adventure bag.
Nice. Yeah. So anybody who's played Hogwarts Battle is going to find this extremely familiar.
Totally.
Yeah.
And
awesome.
Then it adds a little bit more, which is very, very fun.
We're going to take a look at one more, another Disney title. We're hardcore on the Disney, I think, today, and that is Geek Out Disney. Let's talk about that.
Disney, designed by Elisa Teague. So this game is super fun. It challenges you to know, quiz your friends with how much you know about Disney knowledge. So in this game, what you're doing is you've got these cards, and you've got your board right here. It has one to five. First person to five wins the game. So you'll get a card. You roll a die, and on the die, it'll let you know if it's going to be Disney animation, Disney film, music, miscellaneous, and so on. And so if it's in like a Disney animation, the question I'm going to, we played it today, is can you name two boats that are in a film, or two films that have boats for Disney animation? So if it was your question, you'd say, yes, I could name two. And the next person will go, I could name three. So I could name four, I could name five.
Okay.
We go around until no one can name any more, and then we stop, right? And then that person then needs to name.
Yeah, and then do you work your way backwards, or do you bet again, or does he just...
No, so
like,
once the person can do it or not...
No, if they can't...
If they can't, they lose a point.
Okay.
So you can go negative five. It's kind of neat, you can kind of bluff, too. Because, like, okay, how many dwarves can you name? Like, I could name two, you could name three, but we know at least seven...
Yeah.
Right, but there are a couple more. And
well,
so...
we played Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, a gemstone mining game.
Yeah, yeah.
Also a product of the OP. So we can name the Seven Dwarfs.
Right. But are there other ones, right? It gets kind of interesting on that, right? So like,
So
with the boats one, I find it kind of fun. It's like, okay, I can name eight, right? And it's like, it's pretty good. But then at the end of it, you're like, okay, you know, Frozen has one. Tarzan's got a boat.
Yep.
Atlantis has a boat.
Like, does the Jungle Book count?
Because
Baloo acts like a boat.
So the cool thing is all that argument is part of the game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you got it. And then we get into a whole debate where what Star Wars ships are ships and boats? Right? An X-Wing's a ship, but Jabba's sail barge is a boat.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Okay. All right, sure. Right? And, so, and that's a Disney movie now.
Yeah, right? So it kind of gets into that fun little back and forth on there, which is pretty cool. And then, so in this game, you're playing to five, and so it's all kinds of questions. Like there was one where it was name movies where a dog is the main character. Can you name at least two? Right? And so, yes, you can name two, but can you name three? But
can I do more than two? I'm not sure.
I mean, I'm at The Fox and the Hound and The Lady and the Tramp.
I got third one.
Okay, what's that?
101 Dalmatians.
Oh, there you go.
That's a good one.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then you can go Bolt.
Okay, sure. Is Balto, is that a Disney movie?
That's not a
Disney
movie.
Okay. Okay.
But you can go Air Bud.
Okay, sure.
Right?
Sure, yeah.
Then you go down this whole, like...
Everybody's impressed with Ross's Disney knowledge right now.
I'm only doing this right now because Lauren, who runs our social media, we did a playthrough on our Op Live.
Sure.
And she just wrecked us. She was like, oh, yeah, I could name... there was one where it was name films with castles. And then she was like, okay, cool. She busted it out. But then the next one was... But while she was naming the castle, she was naming the royals that were in the castle.
Oh, no.
And she was like, oh, it's, I can't even do it. But she was like, oh, for Snow White, it's this. And for,
for Sleeping
Beauty, it's this. And you're just like, I'm so, we got to go for the trivia night. Like, we got to go.
Yeah,
right. So yeah, so it's kind of a cool game where you can really get to, like, geek out with that knowledge.
Awesome.
And it's a fun way to do that up. And if we were just playing with the cards... and just trying to see who could do it up.
Yeah, right? That's so, fun. That's a lot of fun.
It's good. It's fantastic. Lucy did a great job with it. And it's out now in stores, too.
Awesome.
So.
That was Geek Out Disney.
Yeah, Geek Out Disney. Defense Against the Dark Arts.
Yeah.
So this is a game that was out last year.
This year.
It was this year? I thought
earlier this year.
Maybe I saw a preview of it last year. I'm not sure.
It got previewed a little bit last year, but now it's been out since May.
Okay, awesome. And this is similar to Hogwarts Battle, but two-player only.
Correct. So Hogwarts Battle and Toy Story, they're all co-op.
Cooperative
deck
builders,
playing together. And this one, it is a competitive game where we are playing as students of Hogwarts. So you're Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw, Slytherin, Gryffindor, and so on.
Ravenclaw.
Yeah, Hufflepuff. What are you?
Ravenclaw.
Look at this.
We all got sorted right.
That's
yeah.
Great. Look
yeah.
at that.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. So, so this game, what you're doing is it's a dueling club game. So it's a tug of war where you're trying to push the other player off the board. And then first person to three.
Right? I like it.
So it's same kind of engine where you're acquiring spells, items, and allies. But in the game, though, your allies stay out. And they give you more passive abilities, right? You've got other spells you can do that boost up stuff. You've got hexes now. So I can put hexes into your deck.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And then they guess you lose a turn, discard two cards. Are only for one turn. You only play these kinds of cards. You can't heal.
Okay.
Right?
Okay,
but
sure.
It revs up. So, like, the first game, you're building your deck. Game two, you kind of have already kind of a strategy going on. And then by game three, if you don't and the other player does, it's going to be a quick wipe.
Yeah.
So, it's quick. So you do it like 20 minutes, 30 minutes kind of thing. But it has that fun, nice deck engine building game, a lot of replayability.
Awesome.
Yeah, very fun.
And I see Clue Dungeons & Dragons over there as well.
Yes.
I know a lot of people have been psyched about this.
Yes, yes, yes. So this has been so much fun to work with D&D, especially right now during kind of like...
It's a total D&D
the
renaissance.
Resurgence, it is
huge.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So we did the third edition D&D Clue.
Uh-huh.
So now we're doing the fifth edition D&D Clue. Fantastic art, all from the Descent to Avernus. Right, so you're playing right along that storyline, and you've got all the D&D characters you know and love. So you've got like Misk and Boo and things like that. And so you're in Waterdeep, and one of the characters in your party has been killed and taken over by a demon.
Okay.
So you have to find out who it is, who's impersonating.
So it's like almost like the traitor mechanic, kind of.
A little bit.
Very cool.
And then they've hidden the infernal cube somewhere in Waterdeep.
Okay.
So you've got to go and find it.
Nice.
So you got to find out who's dead, with what weapon, and then where's the cube, right?
Awesome.
And then along with that, you've also got to watch out, because if you're in certain spaces and you roll certain dice, demons can come and mess with your character. And so they can do all kinds of cool stuff there, and if you get too many demons on your character, you die.
So very unlike Obstacles and Adventures.
Well, it is D&D.
Yes, of course, absolutely.
And then along with that, you've also put in an adventure mode where you're playing as a team to solve the mystery.
Oh, cool.
Solo, So, and it's got a couple other modes in there too. So, along with being a classic clue game, we like putting a little spin on a lot of our games there.
Absolutely.
And adding more stuff to it. It's got metal pieces, which is super cool. All custom illustrated art, which is great. And then taking a lot of the D&D art you know and love, and then giving it more of that like watercolor sort of look to it, which has been very fun.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, so if you like D&D, but you want to take a little bit of a break, it's really good. My my D&D group, we stopped one night and then played this instead.
That's awesome. All right, awesome. Well, that's a ton of stuff. It's actually more stuff than I thought we were going to talk about, but that's great. It's because you have so much good stuff. I mean, that's how it is.
So we are celebrating 25 years as a company this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been fantastic. We moved to a new building. It's super nice, right on the coast of Carlsbad. It's really cool. Everyone there at the company, it's been a wonderful time. So 2020 is going to be really cool too.
Awesome. You got anything? Anything? Come on.
I can't say anything.
Come on.
I want to so bad.
All right, I tried.
Believe me, like when anybody hits it, be like, hey, remember back at PAX?
Yeah. Now I can. Okay. All right. So that's a ton of stuff. So D&D, Clue, Toy Story, Obstacles, Adventures, Geek Out, Disney. And Defense Against the Dark Arts. That's a lot of awesome stuff that everybody can get this holiday season.
If you go on the app.games, the website, they have our prices on there, our game descriptions, where you can buy your games, all kinds of cool stuff.
Sweet. Awesome. Great. Thanks so much, Ross. Appreciate
it.
Thank
you.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Yay.
All right, so that's the first batch of interviews that we have from PAX Unplugged. There will be more. I think we came home with almost 20 interviews from the show.
Yeah, pretty close to that.
So
I hope you enjoyed what you heard today.
Mm-hmm.
If you heard anything that you disagree with, that you agree with, you want to tell us, you want to yell at us, you want to ask for more content with our kids.
Yeah, if a publisher mentioned something and you want to learn more about it or something, I mean, there's lots of ways that you can let us know.
You can find us on all of the social media at FamilyGamersAA.
Mm-hmm. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can go to our community. Go to thefamilygamers.com/community. It'll bring you right into our Facebook community where you can talk with other parents and other family gamers about the stuff that they're playing with their kids, their brothers, their sisters, aunts and uncles.
Or you can, of course, email us.
That's right. Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show. Tell your friends about the show and leave us a review, please, at Apple Podcasts or whatever your podcast subscription source is. We really, really appreciate those reviews.
It really does make a difference for other people to be able to find the podcast.
Yeah, that's right. So, we are the Family Gamers. We are proud members of the Dice Tower Network. We are super happy to be able to bring this show to you, and we thank all of you for listening.
Until next week, play games with your kids.